This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And welcome, welcome one and all to a very special episode of No Bad Ideas.
Oh, it's so special.
For two very exciting reasons. Number one, this is our 150th episode.
Oh my God.
So many episodes.
So many bad ideas to go.
We still have a ways to go. And we thought that we would celebrate by bringing back one of our favorite guests into the No Bad Ideas Thunderdome. Oh. He is one of our favorite multitude dudes, the host of shows such as Potterless, Horse, Meddling Adults. It's Mr. Mike Schubert. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be here for episode 150, the Mewtwo of episodes.
That's right.
I'm excited for the next one, which I can only assume will be only about mythical creatures and beings.
But first, we need to make this one all about telekinesis,
taking
the power
over the
mind,
world.
Daddy issues, being massively overpowered.
Oh my goodness. No, it's an honor to be here. I'm very happy to be back and being back on the show, even though last time it was, you know, in person and fun, and now we're all separate and safe, but we're here. And
still fun.
I'm glad.
Still fun.
Just different.
That's the one.
Mike, before we jump into bad ideas, let's talk about good ideas for a second, because you have a lot of those. You make a lot of shows and you're working on something new right now. Do you want to tell the folks at home just like very quickly what it is?
Yeah. If you're listening to this between March 30th and April 30th of 2021, that means a Kickstarter is live for a new podcast project that I will hopefully be making in the future if we get funded. And that project is called Modern Muckraker. It is a investigative journalism podcast where I will be playing a character that is over the top and fully convinced that he is completing the world's most important investigative research possible, answering the hard hitting questions that the world has hidden from you. But really, these questions are going to be along the lines of, when should Spider-Man take the subway instead of web swinging? So it'll be presented.
I have been wanted this answer for decades. I've been waiting.
There are people who are as convinced and as committed for these pop culture questions, which is what's very exciting about it.
Yeah, we're going to get people. We're going to bring in a whole team, going to do ridiculous amounts of research and get highly overqualified guests to answer these questions. So we'll be arriving at exact answers for the Spider-Man one. For example, I'll talk with people at Marvel to understand Spider-Man's whole deal. I will talk with physicists to break down the mechanics of web swinging and come up with like a kinematic equation for it. And then I will talk with people that work for the New York City Metro Transit Authority to have like all of the exact information about the subway system. I downloaded a CSV file that has the building height of every building in all of New York City. And you know, CSV files are usually like a couple hundred kilobytes. It's like 2 gigabyte CSV file. That's how much information is on it. So we're just going to do ridiculous over the top research. And with a whole team of sound designers and editors and writers and producers, like make it feel like an NPR like highly produced podcast, but at its core, it's the silliest, most absurd questions. But that's what we're doing at Kickstarter. Is I want to bring in a whole team and pay people up front. I don't want to hope that a Patreon kicks off or ad money rolls in. So I want to be able to pay people what they are worth before we start, much like you guys did with Unseen. And I want to pay people a fair wage because we've all been either underpaid or not paid at some point in our creative careers. So just like you guys did for your project, I want to be able to follow in your footsteps and pay people money amounts that are respectable and that they deserve for the work that they're going to put into the show. So you can support that at bit.ly/modernmuckraker, or you can learn more about the show at modernmuck.com.
And we're going to have links to all the relevant places in the episode description if you want to just click on those as well.
They'll take you right there.
This is already my favorite podcast and I haven't even listened to it yet. So please, guys, help us get this made. Help me listen to this show and fall in love with it. I'm sure you're all invested in this But no, it sounds like an awesome project, and we're going to talk a little bit more about it in the back half of the show.
Yeah.
But first, we have some business to attend to, guys. We've got some bad ideas that we need to try to figure out a pitch for how to turn them into good stories. In just 10 minutes, just 10 very, very short minutes. Zach, I believe that you have our first idea of the day.
I do. And it's a rare day that I have a crypto related bad idea. But it's always an exciting day.
Here we go.
I feel like bad is in all caps for this, because anything with cryptocurrency, like, I already hated it before all the reports came out that were like, it's actually horrible for the environment. It's like, oh, great. Another reason to hate this.
Well, it's in caps and with those dollar sign marks down it, because it's
every letter
article specifically.
So anything can be, yeah, B with two lines, That's A with right. two lines, exactly. D with two lines.
Exactly. From the WashingtonPost.com link in the description. He believed Apple's App Store was safe. Then a fake app stole his life savings in Bitcoin.
Oh no, already.
Life savings in Bitcoin just feels like, I know it can be a real thing, but it feels like an oxymoron.
There are multiple angles of badness in this article.
Okay, great.
That's it. Runs deep. Them all. The bad idea onion. It has layers.
Philippi Christodoulou, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, wanted to check his Bitcoin balance last month. So he searched the App Store on his iPhone for Trezor, the maker of a small hardware device he uses to store his cryptocurrency. Up popped the company's padlock logo, set against a bright green background. The app was rated close to 5 stars. He downloaded it and typed in his credentials. In less than 1 second, nearly all his life savings, 17.1 Bitcoin worth $600,000 at the time, was gone.
Yikes.
The app was a fake designed to trick people into thinking it was a legitimate app.
Wow.
But Christodoulou is angrier at Apple than at the thieves themselves. He says Apple marketed the app as a safe, the App Store as a safe and trusted place where each app is reviewed before it is allowed in the store. Christodoulou, once a loyal Apple customer, said he no longer admires the company. Quote, they betrayed the trust I had in them. He said, Apple doesn't deserve to get away with this. Apple bills its App Store as, quote, the world's most trusted marketplace for apps, where every submission is scanned and reviewed, ensuring they are safe, secure, useful, and unique. But in fact, it's easy for scammers to circumvent Apple's rules, according to experts. Criminal app developers can break Apple's rules by submitting seemingly innocuous apps for approval, then transforming them into phishing apps that trick people into giving up their information, according to Apple. When Apple finds out, it removes the apps, bans the developers, the company says, but it's too late for people who fell for the scam, especially with crypto. This is my editorial, where things cannot be undone or clawed back. Crypto scams are also common on Google's Android and the web, but their presence on the App Store is more surprising because Apple says it curates the store and checks each app, which creates high levels of consumer trust. The 15 to 30% commission Apple collects on all sales on the App Store goes to fund the, quote, highly curated customer experience, the company said. Quote, user trust is the foundation of why we created the App Store and have only deepened that commitment in the years since. Said the Apple spokesperson, Fred Sens. Study after study has shown that the App Store is the most secure app marketplace in the world, and we're constantly at work to maintain that standard and to further strengthen the App Store's protections.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just laughing at the words "the most," not like studies have shown that it is secure, but rather like the most secure, like, you know.
Relatively speaking, this ship sinks less.
Sign me up for that transatlantic voyage.
In the limited instances where when criminals defraud our users, we take swift action against these actors, as well as to prevent similar violations in the future. The ability of apps to morph into something entirely different after they are approved by the App Store raises questions about the effectiveness of Apple's review process to stop scammers. Apple won't say how often these scams appear or how often it removes them, but it did remove over 6,500 apps for, quote, hidden or undocumented features last year. Apple touts its user safety as its defense against accusations from lawmakers, regulators, and competitors that the company uses its monopoly over app distribution on iPhones anti-competitively. Basically, they sure like to justify their monopoly with safety as a defense. So to cut towards the end of this article, only one of Christodoulou's 18.1 Bitcoin was spared because he transferred it to a Bitcoin saving service called BlockFi. At the time of his theft, at the time of the theft, his 17.1 stolen Bitcoins were worth 600,000, but they soon went up in value to 1 million. Christodoulou says he's taking medication and seeing a psychiatrist. Quote, it broke me. I'm still not recovered from it, he said.
Poor man.
He still hasn't heard from Apple. And with that nightmare, I put 10 minutes on the clock.
Yeah, hit us.
Both the badness of being duped and the badness of putting all your life savings in one very precarious basket.
Well, the being duped is not an idea. That's just like a bad thing that happens.
Yes.
The putting your life savings into crypto, that's where I'm that's my brother. All right, Sarah, what were you going to say?
Just at the very end, the thing that caught my ear was I hope this poor man gets the help that he needs and the closure that he needs. But like, crypto scam therapist, that's something I haven't heard before. Like someone who specializes in sort of putting people back together who have been burned by the world of cryptocurrency.
Right. You do that like exposure therapy for arachnophobia, but with a digital coin where you're just in a VR headset with like a gold coin on the other side of the room, just screaming, no.
Yeah, I feel like this guy should be able to sue Apple, right? I feel like he should have a case.
Yeah, probably.
I hope he can end up making more money than he lost by suing the crap out of Apple.
It's not like they're good for it.
Yeah, I mean,
the most cash-strapped company in the universe. I think they
scrappy underdogs, Apple.
I know.
Yeah. In terms of dramatizing this, the only idea that I have, aside from the crypto therapist, and we can decide which one of these two paths we want to go down, is kind of like, you know how Hollywood, like every like 7 or so years, they make this movie that is like, he was like a regular 40-something man, but then something happened and his life fell apart. And so he turned into Bruce Willis from Die Hard.
Right.
And I think that like the latest one is this like nobody movie with Bob Odenkirk that's coming out right now.
Oh,
that is
I've heard.
You know, like he was a mild-mannered man, but then some men broke into his house. So now he's John fucking Wick.
See, the thing about John Wick, which is more fun, though, is that the villains thought he was some random guy. And then it is John Wick. So I don't know if this would be too similar to John Wick, but like, what if these thieves didn't
stole
realize
John Wick's Bitcoin.
They stole John Wick's cryptocurrency?
The Bitcoin.
Exactly.
Really
like,
you killed
my Bitcoin. Now I will kill everyone.
He would clearly have Dogecoin.
Right.
Oh. R.I.P. Dogecoin.
Or he would have an NFT of his long lost dog.
NFT being
a non-fungible token. That also makes precarious sense.
But I do kind of like this pitch of kind of like, you know, like somebody steals John Wick's Dogecoin. He goes talk to a specialist and it's like, how can we get it back? And the specialist like, it's fucking crypto.
It's gone.
Like it's gone.
Yeah.
The only way that you could get it back is if like you found the guy and somehow convinced him to give it back to you. And then John Wick is just like, cracks knuckles. All right, here we go. Get ready.
And if we want to get super wild with it, where, you know, maybe the first movie is him doing all of this to get back at this guy, but then the second movie, it's Tron. He goes into the digital space to like actually obtain, he fights the blockchain and gets his currency back as a digital
him.
The
thing is that you can't kill someone. You have to get the password before you
like,
do it.
I like that. Or alternatively,
he has to go into the blockchain to get the password.
Right.
Alternatively, at the end of the first movie, he discovers that like the leader of the scammers is not a person, but is like this like AI machine. Like, you know, and you can't fight Skynet. And then John Wick is like, yes, I can. Let me have that Tron helmet. Let's go.
Yeah, you just see like There's this sort of bittersweet ending where he's got his stuff back. And like he and his friend are meeting with coffee in Central Park, sort of talking about how the Pyrrhic victory that they've won.
Right.
And, you know, we have a credit scene. It's a movie. And then after credit scene, just shunk, the helmet goes down.
Mm-hmm. Wait. I think we need a third installment of this trilogy. Right.
We need like another movie.
In the Matrix Tron world, it becomes clear that Apple was in on it the whole time.
Oh my God. Right.
Then it becomes the Matrix where you have to shut down the people who have created everything. Yeah.
Right.
So the first movie is like Rambo, John Wick. The second one is Tron. And then the third one is the Matrix.
Brilliant. Fucking sold.
I just want it to be a false flag operation so that he can fight Bill Gates. That's all I want.
Amazing. So at the end of the rainbow in the Matrix, it turns out that Apple and Windows are all just, and Android, all these things are just an illusion.
It's all a conglomerate. It's all
Apple. Just the Matrix.
Yeah, it is.
Apple solely existed. It was a Microsoft creation just to like create that group of people that every time an iPhone has a new feature in Twitter, they're like, actually, Android phones have had this for 12 years. Like Apple solely exists to like create the neckbeard fan base that like yells about these kind of things online and are the most ardent Android fans.
How do you sell more cola? You make a war between Pepsi and Coke.
You know what I'm most excited about here? All of the like terrible Schwarzenegger style puns that'll be in this. Like, you know, like before he goes to Apple, he just like puts on the sunglasses and is like, they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away, so no one will be able to save you after I'm done with you. Like, you know, just like all the terrible like 80s action movie.
Oh yeah. Lines. Every single time someone comes into a room, it has to be like on a dramatic line, like person A and person B talking about person C. And then he kicks the door open. It was like, actually, every character introduction has to be that.
Yeah.
are we going to set this in an alternate version of the 1980s? Like, should they just have 80s hair and 80s fashion as well? Or just we're keeping the pun structure?
I like the idea of, you know, you kind of start the first movie and you don't realize that it's set in an alternate world. And slowly but surely, kind of like more things make it clear. Like, at first you think that it's just kind of like, oh, it's just a movie about some guy that lost his Bitcoin. But then, like, at a certain point, someone makes, like, a passing comment about, like, you know, like,
Tab,
Apple, Microsoft, you know,
Pepsi,
Verizon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're kind of like, oh, that's strange. And gradually it becomes clear that it is kind of this, like, heightened world.
Ooh. If we wanted to keep the 80s vibe, what it could be is, like, when he goes into the Tron version, everything becomes 80s themed because that software was developed in the 80s.
There we go. So,
and thus, everything is 80s themed.
Right, the source that's when code it was made. The original.
It's still,
these codes were typed by people wearing fingerless gloves. Thus, you know, everything is Billy Idol.
Now, have y'all seen Kung Fury? Are you familiar with
this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Incredible stuff.
I feel like that's the 1980s like ethos aesthetic, like that Hard sort of like funhouse mirror version of the
80s.
Right.
I love Amazing. It.
I think we've got a winner here, guys.
In the 2 minutes you have left, what's it called? And I guess what are some of the set pieces in this epic trilogy?
I've been trying to think about the set pieces just because this is true that John Wick at least has like proper opponents. But like if this guy goes after the scammers, it's going to be like a lot of like, you know, nerds sitting around the like, you know, computer screen.
But nerds with katanas, Gabriel.
Oh, never mind. I am sold. All right. Question asked, question answered.
On satellite uplinked sketchy Russian ocean liners.
Perfect. All right. Sold.
I think for a title, just because like I also am not a huge fan of NFTs. The only redeeming quality about them is that the word fungible is very fun to say. So the movie could be called like Fungible or Non-Fungible or the Non-Fungible Trilogy. Like we could get that into the title and it gives us a fun connotation for this word that has come about recently.
Oh, yeah. Hang on. Let's think about what's a good way to kind of like slice that. But I really like that.
Because then even the tagline could be like, there's nothing fun about it.
Right.
Oh, man.
I'm like, is there like a dog dad, doge dad pun? Like, I don't know if there's some, Fungible is fun to say.
Yeah.
I think we should not gender swap this. I think this is a dude, but Fungible Fatale.
It's pretty good. That is really good.
That is pretty great. That is pretty great. Somewhere in there, going back to set pieces, somewhere in there, he probably has to win a race of some sort, whether it's in Tron.
In Tron Land.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Like there's something about, you know, he has to beat kind of like the F-Zero style, you know, Grand Prix race around board or whatever.
I also feel like when we get to Matrix World for Apple, instead of it being a bunch of Mr. Smiths wearing suits, it's a bunch of like people wearing black turtlenecks and jeans.
Yes.
Like that is their
and
uniform.
White sneakers.
Yeah.
Amazing. And that's that. Time. Just a bunch of Justin Longs. Although he defected. He's now with Intel.
Yeah. He's like the sprint guy.
I know. Yeah. That was like a real like, oh my God, what's happened to my childhood?
Clearly, he has a mortgage.
I don't know how to feel about this.
Yeah.
I was gonna say he's gonna get that. He hasn't been in a movie in a while. Right. Apparently,
get that money. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. Oh my God.
Wow. Amazing. Well, that's horrifying, and yet one more reason why I'll never touch cryptocurrency. Probably.
Yeah. You know, what really got me
maximum 10% of your net worth, people.
Yeah, and what really got me about that story was kind of this thing at the beginning where it went, you know, he had this money in crypto and he was like, oh, I want to count it, basically. I want to check on it. And it's kind of like, how do you have this without already having the tools to check on it? How do you put this much money into it?
I had $20 in crypto when all of the GameStop stuff was going around. I turned $20 into $40. I feel amazing about it.
Yeah, yeah.
That whole week, I checked my I sold it even when it was still on the up and up because I was checking my phone too much.
Yeah.
And this was about $20.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine having a real amount of money in crypto and not just always having my phone in front of my face refreshing. I cannot imagine.
I've seen people that have dedicated clocks on their wall that up the average price all the time just because pulling out the phone, too stressful. Cut out the middleman.
I cannot imagine. Mm-hmm. My entire saving strategy is in a bank, and I'm just what's the most boring, safe thing possible?
possibly do.
How do I put this money away and not look at it? And then once every couple of weeks, I'm like, oh, cool. That's my investment strategy.
Right, it's nice.
You mean you don't want to tie your future to a Marvin Martian-style rocket that could take you to Mars or blow up at any moment?
No, I'd rather blow up because it's you did this really good thing and people paid you for it. I'd much rather that be than oh, I invested in this risky thing. So much stress.
Seriously.
Well, yeah, this is too starting much, to stress us out. So why don't we move on to our next bad idea and just kind of leave the world of crypto behind for now. And I believe, Mike, you have our second bad idea for today, don't you?
I do. And this one's much more fun, which is good. So this one took place in earlier in March of 2021 in my semi-hometown of Houston. I lived in Houston for 10 years. And when I saw this headline, I got very excited because according to HoustonChronicle.com, again, we'll put the link in for this one, suspected Houston Art Museum burglars flee in boat, escape through storm drainage tunnel.
Amazing.
Wow.
I already love it.
There were people in Houston, Texas that tried to rob a fine arts museum, and then they escaped using a motorboat on the Buffalo Bayou. I'll just start reading the article. Two people suspected of burglarizing the Bayou Bend Collection and Gardens, a museum run by the Museum of Fine Arts Houston, remained on the run early Wednesday after fleeing by boat on the Buffalo Bayou and escaping from authorities through a storm drainage tunnel, police say. Now, I don't know if any of you have been to Houston or are familiar with the Buffalo Bayou, but the Buffalo Bayou is it's like a river, except it is not huge. It is brown, gross water.
Sludge.
And it smells very bad. It's a light brown. I don't think all of it smells bad, but the part that I am most familiar with is I went to high school in downtown Houston, Texas, and there was a bridge that went over the bayou, and a bat colony lived under that bridge, and bat colonies smell very bad. And when I was on the basketball team, we used to have to do 5K running for practices and stuff. and we would always have to run over the bridge for like the final leg of the 5K.
Oh no.
And it was always the worst because you're already really tired. And now you just have to hold your breath for an entire bridge or breathe in a terrible, terrible smell. But like the bayou goes throughout all of Houston. There's some like parks and stuff that have been built up around it, but it's still not like pretty. It's not like the lake in Central Park or something where you're like, oh, look nice. You're like, oh yeah, it's the bayou, I guess. So other Houstonians are more fond of it. Me as a transplant Houstonian, I'm like, yeah, it's the Brown River. Sure. But people escaping using it in a motorboat is very fun.
Yeah, so no.
The article continues. The intruders were reportedly found in the building located at 6003 Memorial Drive in River Oaks around 7:30 p.m. on a Tuesday. And responding officers spotted them running out of the building, said Lieutenant Larry Croson of the Houston Police Department. The pair jumped into a motorboat. Jumped into a motorboat. You love to hear it.
Yeah.
Jumped into a motorboat on Great Buffalo hustle. Bayou that was already set up for them to escape on, and they sped away. Officers on the ground lost sight of the boat, so the department deployed a dive team into the bayou. Mm-mm. With a spotlight, the divers located the suspects on their boat hiding in a drainage culvert. I do not know what that is.
That sounds like a dead end.
Yeah, I think that might be what it is. The two people ran into the storm drainage tunnel. So I'm guessing it's like one of those things with bars, but they were small enough to fit in. So they got out of the boat, I'm assuming, and then they ran into the storm drainage tunnel, which runs beneath River Oaks, which is like the very fancy rich part of Houston. So think New York City, like
Upper West Side-ish.
Yeah, it's like that. Or like, what's the new shitty place with all the glass buildings that's ugly?
Dumbo.
No, in Manhattan.
In Manhattan?
Yeah, where the skyline is. The new one that sucks.
Oh, Hudson Yards.
Hudson Yards, yeah. So it's like the rich, snooty part of Houston. So they're in this drainage ditch, storm drainage tunnel that runs beneath the fancy part of Houston, Texas. Officers pursued them. Police became concerned when they lost touch with the officers in the storm drain, but the officers were safely located. The suspects, however, escaped. Authorities gave no description of the suspects. Investigators are following up to determine who owns the boat. So here's the backstory of what happened. So the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston confirmed Wednesday morning that no one was harmed and no works of art were damaged during Tuesday night's intrusion. The 14-acre property and former home of the late philanthropist Ima Hogg, which sounds like a fake name.
Does. Yeah.
Absolutely does.
Oh, yeah. Seymour Butts. Houses a collection of decorative art, paintings, and furniture. There are more than 2,500 objects on display throughout the 28 rooms and galleries, including furniture, paintings, sculpture, prints, ceramics, glass, metals, and textiles. A spokesperson added that nothing appears to have been removed from the premises. We have examined camera footage and we are in contact with the police and we are performing a physical inventory this morning. This is what they say occurred. Last night at approximately 6:45 p.m., two intruders, a man and a woman, entered Bayou Bend through a grate to a basement window on the north terrace of the house museum. Our burglar alarm sounded, our security guard responded, and the intruders escaped through the front door of the south facade. Our security guard chased them through the woods. The intruders had a motorboat waiting on the bayou. The Houston police found the boat after they escaped through a culvert.
God damn.
So that is all of the reporting on this. So yeah, we have people trying to steal art, not successfully stealing it, and then escaping via motorboat on the Buffalo Bayou, then through a drainage ditch. It's like a lower stakes, less intense, but more silly Shawshank, and I'm here for it. So at this point, I will start
Texas Redux of the Italian Job.
Yeah, no, actually, though. Jeez.
All right, the timer is now starting.
Man, that is like a security feature I did not think about for museums that are placed like kind of scenically along rivers or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'm in shock. Like, I don't like the only thing that did is that I guess I'm now thinking of like Houston as this kind of much more surreal, much more impressionistic place.
Seriously,
than I previously had in my mind.
Just for clarity, they found the boat, but the people, they got away with it.
The people.
Yeah, people got away.
Holy
they escaped
shit.
Through the storage, the storm drainage tunnel. So yeah, they ended up getting
so
away.
Far.
And the bayou's not huge. The bayou is like, you can wade through the bayou. It is not like a large rushing river. It's like a big creek, if you will.
Yeah, but like when you need to go fast, that speedboat is sure going to do it for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
So do we want like this heist to have succeeded and these people to now be on the run? or do we want to do something different with boats and storm drains and fine art?
It's such a good idea that it's such a good story that it feels bad to not dramatize it. I'm just like, how do we work I'm a hog into this show? Like, what a character that person already
sounds like a Flannery O'Connor protagonist.
That is the person, that is the philanthropist that turned their home into a museum. Some Houston-based philanthropist named I'm a Hog, I-M-A, first name, H-O-G-G, last name.
Incredible.
So I wonder if there's the cat and mouse story of the movie opens with the newscast of on the TV, and it like pans down in the like kind of quiet coffee shop, and you see the people like huddled in their booth, like with their coffee and eggs, just being like, I can't believe we got away with this. What do we do? What do we do now? And then so you have that sort of storyline, and then you have the I'm a hog sort of like office where everybody's like stressing about getting back this priceless piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question of, can they stay on the lam? Do they need to steal again? Are they emboldened by their success to?
Here's a question, and this may help determine like sort of the direction we go in. Are these people like just random art thieves, or are they like native Houstonians who have some sort of claim to the object that they took from the I'm a Hawk Museum, which is just something I'm going to say out loud from time to time.
And just spelling check on that. That's I-M-A space H-O-G-G.
Yes, it is.
I-M-A or I-N-A?
I-M-A.
Wow.
Google and see who this person is.
So Miss Hogg was known as the First Lady of Texas.
Yes. Yeah. I just saw that. Googled it. Yep.
Circa 1900.
Yeah, lived from 1882 to 1975, an American society leader, philanthropist, and patron and collector of the arts, and one of the most respected women in Texas during the 20th century. She was an avid art collector and owned works by Picasso, Klee, Matisse, and others.
The more you know. Wow, that's awesome.
Hogg was the daughter of someone named James Stephen Big Jim Hogg.
Big Jim Hogg.
Big Jim
Incredible.
Hogg.
There's a local lore, obviously a fake rumor, that she has a sister named Yura Hogg.
Hilarious. Oh. No, okay,
the
I've
Hoggs
got it.
Are rolling over in their graves.
I mean, we have to do a biopic about this family. We're on the hook for that, too. Yeah.
No. But here's what it is. There's this kind of like very rich, very powerful family in Texas. Mm-hmm. There is the daughter who was always kind of like, you know, the like goody two shoes, stayed in line, did exactly what the family wanted out of her, including some stuff where like maybe the family wasn't great, but she always backed them up.
Slight correction. Her father was Big Jim Hogg, not her son, which makes it way better. Okay.
Yeah.
In this case, I'm going to play with the chronology. Her brother, Big Jim, however, was the black sheep of the family and like, you know, did not behave himself, always kind of like stood up to mom and dad. Then when mom and dad passed away, they left all of the art collection to the daughter. But Big Jim is like, no, wait a minute. Half of those are mine. And the daughter's just like, if you wanted them, you should have been here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You should have fucking earned them. Like, you know, it's not like, you know, you deserve those by birth. And he's like, but you got them because of birth. Like, no, hang on a second. What the fuck are you talking about, Ina? And so then it's kind of like a heist in order to get back like this stuff that he sees is like
what he feels he's owed.
Yes, his half of the inheritance.
I love it. Yeah, Big Jim does not roam in society circles, so he has all sorts of shady friends that he can
That's
call
right.
No. Ocean's 11 with everyone has a ridiculous nickname. Exactly. Everyone is very Texan. Yeah, like, does everyone have an animal-based name? Like, is that the theme?
I feel like there has to be a fight over who gets to be Big Jim. No.
You don't want to talk about, we don't talk about what he did to become Big Jim.
Right.
Yeah, no.
I guess everyone can have had an animal themed name or like a descriptor, like, you know, Holler and Jeff or something like that.
Oh, right. And there's like Coyote Bill or whatever.
Right.
Road Runner Steve.
Mm-hmm. Or just like normal last names that also happen to be animals, like Crow is a pretty common
last name. Oh, yes. But yes, yeah, that's great.
Okay. I like this.
A big question that I have is just like, I want to know what art they were trying to steal.
Yeah.
Like that seems very interesting. Like what was their goal? Since they didn't get anything, I'm very intrigued about that. What were they going for?
Right, because it would have to be something that they could protect from the water and the sewers that they had planned on escaping in.
And something they felt they could reasonably flip on the black market. Because that's the thing with stealing art is you have to find someone to sell it to. That seems like harder than stealing it.
Right. Yes. Unless it was a family heirloom they're just trying to
Right. Yes, of course. Then they don't
exactly, have to sell it. Like if they're just like, they just want to keep it in their attic, just like feel like they have it.
Right, they're just
that like, that's one thing. I think it's more interesting if Big Jim needs some money and wants to flip it.
Oh, and that's why he goes back to Ima after all these years of just kind of like, look, like, you know, I've got like, you know, these sharks that I owe money to. I need
my life savings got stolen from Bitcoin.
I put everything in Bitcoin.
I can take it for a ride.
The app store fucked me. We got to go get the painting. But you got to imagine if they had that boat, they probably had like a some sort of weatherproof sack to like shove whatever painting in. Like they
had a pelican case or something.
Yeah. They thought this through.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But no, I like this. Like the motivation is clearer now. This all makes sense. And so then, so then it's kind of a like. And so here's, I think, like my question. Are we seeing the heist from Big Jim's perspective, or are we seeing it from Ima's perspective?
Because they're kind of
both like suspense in. They're kind of suspenseful in two different ways.
Yeah, one is like the sort of inside man scenario of following whoever Ima hires to get her painting back, but she's keeping secrets about like how shitty the Hog family has been to Jim. And the other is more. More like a straight like Ocean's 11-y heist setup, and both are good. I think it depends on honestly how clever Jim is, because like there's a certain amount of joy in seeing someone who's very good at heist work and sort of work their way out of unexpected difficulties. Whereas if like that's not sort of a prime characteristic of that person, then you want to follow the detective who's like really, really good at sort of figuring out where they made the mistakes and stuff.
I imagine Jim, who probably had like a very good education foisted upon him by the Hog family,
indeed,
is all things considered probably pretty sharp and pretty clever. Coyote Bill and Crow and those guys, I think, like, can be a little bit more hit and missy. I think that, like, you know, it may be kind of a brilliant general working with like less than fantastic troops,
which is an interesting dynamic in its own right.
Yeah. Have 30 seconds. Do we have a title?
Hog Wild.
There we go. Oh! Boom. That's so good. Fucking sold.
Wow.
That's great.
Absolutely nailed it. Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. We're not beating that. That's great, Sarah.
So good.
And that would be time.
Amazing. What a wild story.
A hog wild story.
Yeah.
Jesus. Oof. Oh, my God.
Man.
We just need to find a Texas rapper to make the theme song with the H-O-double-G.
Yeah. There's a lot of good options. Slim Thug, Paul Wall, Bun B. There's a lot of really great. Like, the whole soundtrack could just be all Houston rappers. Travis Scott. Like, you could get a lot of good people.
Goddamn, call us.
Beyonce is from Houston. She could do a whole, you know, like a Skyfall Adele thing. It could get real fun.
Yeah, no, the opening credits for this are going to be tight.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be solid. I was so happy when I saw that news story. Me and a bunch of my Houston friends just like texted that link with art heist in all caps to each other. And one of my friends from college, a guy that I knew, he worked for the museums in Houston for a little bit. And his response was, that's awesome.
Nice.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I lived in Houston for like 4 months. Nothing that interesting ever happened.
What part of town were you in?
Oh, gosh. In downtown, kind of like near where MD Anderson is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Med Center. That's really close to where I went to school at Rice University.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Museums are all in that area. So you were close to where this took
primed.
Place.
Yeah.
You were there.
All right. Zach and I are going to do a quick Google Street View search to find out what these guys are talking about. And while we do that, we're going to take a quick break. But we'll be right back with more No Bad Ideas.
Hello there, Zach Valenti here, jumping into this episode with this brief message. Perhaps you've heard. We are in the home stretch of our Share the Magic campaign for our latest audio fiction series, Unseen. You, yes you, can head on over to share.unseen.show to grab a unique link to recommend our audio fiction program, Unseen, to friends and family and strangers on the internet that you think could use a little more magic in their lives these days. We'll be keeping count of everybody who gets brought to the show through these links, and we'll be rewarding the top three sharers with some exclusive Unseen merch. We were going to stop counting March 31st, but now that the April Fool's special will be coming out on April 20th, we're going to be extending the campaign to April 19th. Winners will be announced in the April Fool's special on 420. So head on over to share.unseen.show to grab your unique link and start sharing today. Thanks so much for helping spread the magic. All right, let's get back to more bad ideas.
All right, everybody, welcome back to No Bad Ideas. We are still here with our special guest star, Mr. Mike Schubert. And now that we've kind of done the hard work of turning bad ideas into the beginnings of good stories, Mike, we want to take a second to talk a little bit more about this new adventure that you're embarking upon and just talk a little bit more about this Kickstarter and this new project. Is that cool? Can we ask you some
questions? Of course,
questions?
Please ask me anything and everything. Something I'm trying to do with the promotion of this is be like a big vulnerable boy about it, because the whole like thing of the character I'm playing in the show is that he's like supremely confident and very sure of himself, but like in reality, like, this is scary for me. So I'm very much okay with getting deep and honest and open and you know, not trying to like act like I am someone I'm not here.
So actually, this is something that I was curious about. So in the show itself, you're going to be playing a fictionalized version of yourself?
Yeah, the way I'm viewing it is kind of like Colbert Report, where he still was Stephen Colbert, but he was like a heightened version of himself. Right. So I'm not going to like have a different character name or whatever, but like the way in which I talk will be a very like serious way, as if you are listening to like a criminal or something, and where it's got like all these music and stuff, you know, the marimbas in the background while I'm talking and stuff like that. But like in a straight face voice, I would be saying like very silly things. Like, I think one of the jokes that I had in the Spider-Man script was talking about I'm a huge Yankees fan. So at some point I said something where I was like, New York City is home to like this many people. And I was like, one professional baseball team, the New York Yankees, and a minor league baseball team, the New York Mets. But like say like super as if I'm not making a joke. So
Right.
And
like
also
the most dead of pans.
Yeah. And then eventually if the Kickstarter works and the show is live, like all of the branding around it too will be like all serious. Like the website will be in character, the social media will be in character. So like all parts of it will be like, this is very serious. But that's also part of the joke, is that every question we're going to answer is bonkers.
Nice.
Amazing.
I applaud the commitment.
It's going to be fun. But yeah, I didn't want to like name a different character, or like make lore. It's just going to be a heightened version of Mike Schubert, me, the person. Because these are still questions I do want to answer. It's just a matter of like answering them in a more fun way by pretending this is deep, hard hitting journalism.
Sure.
but while doing it as like Mike to the 11th degree.
Oh, Mike, yeah. Because I'm like already up. 11 on the podcasts I host. But now it's just like we've broken the dial.
Right. And it's 11 in a different direction. It seems like than mm-hmm. sort of what you do on like Potterless or Horse.
Yes, we did when we were pitching the show originally. We did like a little 5-minute teaser, and if you support it, one of the tiers, you can like get access to that little teaser. And the big note with the people that I was like with Brandon, who's going to be our sound designer if it all works out. I had to like keep doing. Brandon. He was like, talk slower. Because like normal Mike Schubert is like rapid fire, really talk fasting, but this character of Mike Schubert is like journalistic presentation of events kind of thing. Mm-hmm, where it's, you
mm-hmm.
know,
right. Horn rimmed glasses. Tone.
Oh, yeah. And chai tea. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Is there a biography for fictional Mike?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't want to like, I don't know if we want to be making like a backstory and lore and all of this stuff, mm-hmm. but really more along the lines of just like, Mike Schubert, the modern muckraker, believes he deserves a Pulitzer and a Peabody the work that he's doing. And very much so, it's like no one has dared to ask these questions. Like people are afraid to do the work that I'm doing. And that's why we specifically chose muckraker as the word mm-hmm. for it.
Because totally.
Back in the day, muckrakers were people like Upton Sinclair who did The Jungle about the meatpacking industry. So the modern muckraker is like, we've lost this dying art of people uncovering the truths that the world doesn't want you to know. So like right. I will
getting,
be the
getting
person.
Their hands dirty with their investigative journalism.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And same thing, like when I have the interviews with all of the overqualified people, like I'll still be like incredibly serious during those interviews and asking them. The joke is gonna like a big part of the joke for me. This is something that a now defunct podcast, How to Do Everything, would do, a really good mm-hmm. old NPR show, is like they would try. There was one I remember in particular that the question they were trying to answer for their listener was like, I get to class late and I have food in my lunch bag and it's a Velcro. How do I open Velcro quietly?
Mm.
So they immediately cut to an interview and they're like, yeah, to talk about this, we had a phone call with like the head of something in the army, because that's something they develop of like Velcro in a way that on the battlefield, you don't make noise. So it's like, yeah, seemingly innocuous question. And then it's like, we talked with Lieutenant General, whatever the hell. Like that already, I want to be a joke, is like, you got this person to answer it, and then like the interview itself would be ridiculous just because I will be asking these obnoxious questions of these people.
If you ever need just kind of like a fictional expert, you could have it even be like, you know, this is someone that works very high up in government work. Their name is classified. Their voice had to be modulated. Right. Exactly. But they are here to talk to us about this, that, and the other.
Yeah. I want to get as many real people as we can so that if people do Google it, they're like, oh, that person is the vice president of the MTA. But that could be very fun too. Use the voice modulator like, and all that too. Could be a good time.
Oh, always fun. Are there any shows that you've been like listening to sort of mine for comedy and or like sort of journalistic tics that you're going to make fun of?
Yeah. How to Do Everything is a big one just because like the way they do interviews is fun. And they're mm-hmm. very big on like the joke is what they are doing the whole time, like going over the top to answer questions for people and stuff. Another one that's a big inspiration is Unraveled, the Polygon series that Brian David Gilbert used to host, but taking that in more of a way, like, cause all those episodes are very different and some were more along the lines of stuff we're doing and some stuff was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
What I think separates this show from some of the other things is that like each question will have like an exact answerable answer. And I don't want it to be subjective. Like I don't want it to be what's the best this or ranking mm-hmm. this or, mm-hmm. or
yeah,
speculative this. With this Spider-Man one, I think it really makes it clear that like we will arrive at an answer where it's like Spider-Man should take the Uptown A, you know, weekdays after 5 on the express line, you know, something like that, where each question's got an exact answer. And I think that's my engineering brain, because before I went full-time podcasting, I was an engineer for 4 years. And I think it's like taking that part of my nerdiness and combining it with me just being a big nerd for video games and books and comic books and movies and TV. And that's the type of pop culture questions we'll be answering. But I see these kind of things where people do these great deep dives, but when it's subjective, it makes me feel sad because then you just got at this like non-exact answer. And I want to be like, no, here's all of the work. I'm showing all of my work like I had to do on my mechanical engineering exams. You don't get full credit unless you show exactly how you arrived at your answer. And here is why. And then there's no disputing because like we did the work.
Yeah.
So that I think that's going to separate from some of these other shows that we're basing it on.
Amazing.
Goddamn.
Now, do you kind of have ideas for all the things that you'd like to look at during the first season? Like, do you kind of have like that all planned out? Are you giving yourself like some slots to discover things while you get closer to it?
So the initial plan right now, what we've put for the Kickstarter, the goal that will get us, that's the money we arrived at for a budget to fund a 4-episode season. And then we have some stretch goals to do 5 episodes or 6 episodes and then a whole second season. So I have a bunch of different.
Vaguely familiar. I don't know.
It is so much to where now, like if I'm in Google Chrome and I type you in the URL thing, it's like unseen Kickstarter, like autofill. Like that's how often I was looking at your guys' stuff. I cannot thank you enough for all the help there. But yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch of ideas. And that's also part of the reward is like at a certain tier, you can see all of the different topics that these questions fall under. And then at a higher tier, you'll learn the exact questions that go along with each of these topics. And then if those tiers are going to vote on the ones that make the cut. So the Spider-Man is a lock. The Spider-Man one is for sure going to be episode 1. But then the next 3, you can decide. And basically what I've just been doing is Multitude is an executive producer on the show. So it's not a Multitude show, but their production team has been helping me kind of shape it. And they helped take the initial idea into what it is now and helped with some Kickstarter-y stuff too. We have a Slack channel where basically I'll just throw in questions that I think of when they come to me, whether it's in the shower or when I used to ride the subway and or, you know, whatever, like if I'd have an idea, I would just like type it in that chat. So it existed. So I've got a whole bunch of those. We'll put together something where when the people are voting, it's like, do you want, you know, the Spider-Man one would to one tier would just be framed as like a question about Spider-Man. And then to the higher tier, they will see exactly that it is. When should Spider-Man take the subway instead of Wolverine? Some of our stretch goals are, I have more specific things. So like right now in the Kickstarter, it says like, it's a comic book themed one. And then another one's like, it's a Harry Potter themed one. So that I've got a bunch of different ideas, but we're relying on the people that support the project to really let us know which of these burning questions burn the brightest and the hottest.
Right.
And those are the ones we'll tackle in season 1. And then hopefully we can get to these other questions that I've come up with in season 2 or any future seasons.
Dope. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Now, Mike, so much of your kind of podcasting career has been really focused at looking at kind of pop culture and popular fiction under this like very potent microscope. And with a humorous bent, sure, especially I think with Potterless and with Meddling Adults, but also kind of with like a real critical eye and the real humanist perspective. Why do you think it's important to kind of like really zoom in and reflect on the things that entertain us? And it sounds like this is going to be not only a continuation, but kind of like this idea taken to the nth degree of like really, really putting some of these things under the microscope.
Yeah, I mean, you put that incredibly well. It's taking the stuff that I do at the core of my podcast and just like turning everything up to 11. I think having these discussions is just fun. And it's something that I had seen with other nerdy fandoms that I was a part of before him. But really doing Potterless and seeing the Harry Potter community, because going into it, I had no idea what the Harry Potter fandom was like. I thought that just people read the books and they liked them, and some people read them multiple times and that was like super fans. But once I started making the show and realizing how big and how intense that fandom is, you realize that you could have a fandom where now there's new stuff coming out, but for a while there's just like no new content for years on end, but people were still having conventions and podcasts that solely relied on just having like speculative what if type questions and trying to close loose ends that weren't in the original story. And I think you can see a lot of that now. It's happened a lot with Marvel movies and the MCU, people trying to like tie up stuff and people trying to analyze it. And I think just with nerdiness and nerd culture, one of my favorite things is just being able to have these really intense discussions over things that like at their core don't matter, because we've all had intense heated discussions for things that do matter, especially recently with politics and stuff. And it's refreshing to be able to take that intensity that we bring to some things in our life, whether it's your work life or social life, whatever, but just be able to do it in like a lesser stakes way that is just fun. And it is kind of like you can disagree on opinions, but at the end of the day, it's just like how people are interpreting different things of social media or different things of pop culture. So it's really nice to be able to like look at that stuff and have these fun conversations. I just think it's fun. And it's, I think I like to think I'm bringing a more unique perspective because of my like overly critical analytical engineering brain and adapting that. And totally. Yeah, I just have fun doing it. And I think trying to go super scientific with it and super nerdy about it could be a real fun time.
That's awesome. Beyond kind of all of that, I think that probably the big question, and you already talked a little bit about this at the top of the show, is why Kickstarter? Is this the first project that you've crowdfunded?
It is. Yeah. Everything else I've done before has been Patreon based, because at its core, the other shows that I'm doing, Potterless Horse, Meddling Adults, it's me. Like Potterless is like just me. And then some other people helping out with things here and there. And then Horse, me and Adam doing 50-50 of the work. And then Meddling Adults is like me and Brandon edits it. And then, you know, we have people doing art and music and stuff like that. But for this, it's like actually bringing in a team. And no joke, you guys were a huge inspiration for that with seeing how you handled Unseen. And also just being a part of your other projects, just seeing how you guys brought me in for Time Bombs and Zero Hours. And it was nice to see from that perspective all the kind of things that go into creating a show. I'm fortunate enough to know you guys and the people over at Atypical Artists and even Multitude when they did Next Stop, like how much work goes into a scripted show. And I'm glad that more of these shows are popping up so people realize, like, they'll see a price tag and be like, that's how much money it costs? It's like, yes, that's how much money it costs. If you want to pay people a fair amount and make a good thing, that's how much it costs. So, yeah, the biggest thing is being able to bring in people to make the show better than just, like, me trying to do everything. It's also different because I also have to like do the other stuff. Like my other podcasts are still going to exist. So I can't take on every single burden. And then also with having a scripted show, I've never really done anything with a true script. I want to bring in other people to be able to spitball jokes and have it not just be me writing every single joke, because like I think I'm very funny, but like I want to make sure I have other people. So it's not just great joke. You can keep that one in.
Nothing has ever gone wrong with just like that process.
I think that we should start a new podcast called The Echo Chamber, where it's just that, just like someone aggressively agreeing with himself and finding all his ideas very, very good, no matter what they are.
Isn't that the unaired recordings of Doug Eiffel?
Yes, it is.
I mean, yes.
So I'm curious.
That's a season zero of Wolf 359. Yeah.
So I'm curious if in preparing for the Kickstarter, you did any sort of tests with people or have had any of that sort of first taste of putting together a writer's room?
A little bit. So I pitched this idea to Multitude like 2 years ago. And then we tried bringing it around to different podcast platforms of like, hey, do you want to make this a _ exclusive show? And they all said no, which is why another reason why we did Kickstarter is betting on myself to get the funding.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I worked with the production team of Multitude to do it. So I had written the script. Eric Silver looked a little bit at the script to you know, touch up some of the jokes and stuff. And then Brandon Grugel and I worked together a lot for recording. He did the editing and the sound design and put in like background music and stuff like that. So got a little bit of a taste of it. And then I have people in mind for some of the roles, but I didn't want to ask people to be a part of the project. Like, I didn't want to like promise work to someone and then be like,
we didn't get funded. I can't pay you.
Like, I didn't want people banking like, oh, here's where I can make more income.
Yeah.
So.
No, we did that for Unseen and it kept me up at night. Sort of this idea of kind of like, oh my God, what if we have to tell all of these people who we know and love and respect and admire and care for that? Like, no, never mind. We're
sorry,
not going
to. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were lots of caveats in those emails and it was still very tense.
So I've got people in mind and for the writers, it's the people that I have in my brain are people that I've worked with stuff in the past, like writing sketch comedy videos for. Cool. So there are some people that like I've worked with before. There's some people that I haven't worked with before that I want to ask, though. So, yeah, I mean, I got a little taste of it doing for the show. I have a little taste of it of working on sketch comedy stuff in my improv days before I was full-time podcasting. And I would like to do that process. I'm a big fan of just like collaborative writing, having something, trying to figure out how we can punch up a joke better, really working together like a team-based thing. Improv kind of really shapes how I view life, and improv is really a team sport. So I want to take that to the writing process as well. And, you know, if I come up with like general ideas and then other writer punches up every single joke I've made for a better version, like, cool, we arrived at a better place. I do not care if it's like, well, I didn't think of this joke. Like,
right,
if we get the better joke, we get the better joke. So I'm excited to see how we can do that whole process and have it not be just me writing the funnies.
Like, that kind of attitude is never going to work in the echo chamber.
Yeah, it won't be. But no, I mean, I definitely took a lot of advice from what you guys did and have done. And I appreciate it. And hopefully it will lead to similar success like you guys did for your Kickstarter, and eventually with the show you put forth. It's all awesome stuff. And I'm hoping to be in a similar boat.
Amazing. We're sure you will be. And it's worth saying that we got a lot of great advice from other people that came before us, from the elders of Kickstarter and crowdfunding. And I'm sure that you will pass down your learnings into
the
next folks.
Absolutely love to. And one of my other friends, Alex, he makes board games, and he has funded a lot of his stuff with Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And it makes me happy that podcasting, as a, at least our niche of podcasts, like our circle that we fall into, is like not a cutthroat type of deal. Like, everyone is very helpful with each other, and it's not competitive. It feels like everyone wants to help with everyone, from people, you guys sharing the Kickstarter on social media, to like answering questions. And I had a chat with Gabrielle, and like, I've talked to other people. Like, what he was saying with his board game Kickstarter is, it's like, it's super cutthroat, and in all the language of the branding of it, you have to be like supremely confident and all this stuff. Like, even one of his notes was like, you mentioned in your Kickstarter that you're nervous about this. And I'm like, well, yeah, I think like part of podcasting is like being honest. And he's like, oh, like for board game Kickstarters, you have to like really talk a big game. And I was like, no, wow. I would rather be like, hello, I don't want to be forever remembered as just the Harry Potter guy, which is why I'm making this podcast. So I appreciate that. Like, podcasting lends itself to that, but also collaborative. Even if you guys don't have any vested financial interest, you are all down to help me make this thing. And like, that makes me very happy of finding myself stumbling into being a podcaster full time. Makes me very happy to be in like the least cutthroat type thing, where like everyone is just like, wants every podcast to do well, because people are always asking for new shows. So like, the more podcasts, the better is kind of like how I view it. I haven't really associated with anyone that like wishes ill upon other podcasters, and I don't want to meet those people if they are out there.
I feel like they haven't left their voiceover booth wherever in the world they are.
The echo chamber.
Yeah, that's right. That's where they left. That's where they are.
I think this actually tees us up for this next question, which I think maybe one of the last ones, because we are running a little bit on the longer side. But Mike, how can folks help with this project? If folks that are listening are like, yeah, I need this show in my life the way that I need the show in my life. I need it, Mike. What can they do to help out? Like, what's the best way to make this happen?
Sure. I mean, the first and most direct way is monetarily via the Kickstarter. So if you go to bit.ly/modernmuckraker, that'll take you directly to the Kickstarter. You can learn more about the project, and you can see all the different rewards that you can get, from bonus audio to picking those topics, like we said, to even being on the show. If you want to be one of our experts, that's at one of the higher tiers. We'll find a way to get you in the mix. So lots of different stuff there. That is one way to help. But if you aren't in a financial situation to support, or you don't want to give money, but you still want to help out a little bit, you could just tell people about it. You could share the Kickstarter link, retweet posts that I've been posting on my social media, which is @shoob17 is all my personal stuff. And just getting the word out really helps, and telling anyone about it, it increases the chance of someone finding it and trying to back it. And the more people we have backing it, the closer we get to actually getting that goal, because Kickstarter is all or nothing, or at least this project is. So if we don't hit our goal, oops. So I mean, word of mouth is always really nice. If you can't give monetarily, if you are able to give monetarily, I would very much appreciate it. And I think I'm proud of the rewards that we've put forth. So I hope that you would enjoy.
gorgeous looking rewards. Kickstarter. So it really you should is. At least go check Thank it out. You.
Yeah, we yes. one the one member of the team that like is secured, like already locked in, that we've already paid. So hopefully I get money so we can, you know, not have to just like be at a loss there. Is we got a really nice graphic designer and she did some really nice work with awesome. The logo and we got all the fonts and stuff like that. And my buddy Alex, who I talked to earlier, he mentioned, he was like, Kickstarter is bad at banners. You should make your own using like graphic images. And then I noted you guys did a similar thing too with like your quotes and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So yeah, he was like, Kickstarter is ugly. And a big thing was like, you have to consider people being on their phones about this. And I like looked at my original draft on a phone and I was like, oh, it looks so bad. So that was a big, like at starting at 11:59 PM the night before we were launching, I was like, oh, refresh, rebrand. Oh, no. Oh, it was fine. I go to bed late anyway. So, sure. So yeah. bit.ly/modernmuckraker. You can also go to modernmuck.com, which is our website, which will have all the information. And if you're listening to this in the future, and you're like, oh, I can't support the Kickstarter at all. You could just go there and learn more about the show, when it's coming out, and all sorts of info there.
All right. Well, on that note, we all have a thing to do, which is go smash that link and do that. But as people leave in droves to go check out this Kickstarter, Mike, anywhere else where they should be listening to your work, checking out what you do?
Yeah, if you want to listen to the other podcasts we talked about, Potterless, where it's me reading the Harry Potter books for the very first time. I never read them as a kid, so it's me doing it as an adult, going through the whole series. You can search for Potterless.
Horse great guest stars on that show.
Oh yeah, all of you guys. I think all of you guys have been on all of my podcasts at this point, except for Horse. Horse is a basketball show where me and my buddy Adam Mamawala take basketball, but we present it in a way that's welcoming and anti-gatekeeping. So we just talk about entertaining stuff like Twitter beefs and player drama and what new jerseys look cool and all sorts of that. So that's Horse. And then Meddling Adults is a game show where guests go head to head to try to solve children's mysteries and the winner brings home money for charity. All of these three lovely people have been on the show. So yeah, you can just search for those titles wherever you get your podcast, or I have a website with all my stuff. It's just Shubes. So SCHUB.ES. And that's nice. Got all information and stuff like that.
Nice.
Beautiful. Mike, thank you so much for coming back and being a wonderful guest yet again on No Bad Ideas.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was a blast. I really appreciate you having me on and also giving me the opportunity to talk about this new project and also being a critical reason for why this Kickstarter A exists in the first place and B isn't bad. So thank you really for all the help. It's been awesome. And I'm excited for whatever our future whatever lies ahead for the four of us, because I'm sure it's inevitable that we will cross paths again. Oh, yeah. And that always makes me happy knowing that that's in some way, shape or form, we're going to work together in a podcasting world. And that always brings a smile to my face.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabriel Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Jennifer Schneider, Rena Sarame, and Rebecca Allen. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.